Right at the very end of 2021, my wife and I took our savings and bought a house. When I say I was frugal, I mean I was counting every single penny like it was the most important thing in the world. I'd stress out over a $5 coffee because in my mind, that $5 could go toward the house or anything else we might need. We finally got that house, but right after the social media algorithms completely changed, you know, Instagram was like my main source of generating sales. My sales dropped. I got depressed. I was overwhelmed by the new responsibilities of fixing up an already old house, while also trying to crawl my way back to making a full living. Some days were such a blur of anxiety, I honestly can't even remember what I did. Almost exactly a year after buying that house, I released episode 1 of this podcast, an episode I'd been sitting on for months, too nervous to share. Now, here we are in 2025, and my life feels completely different. I wake up every day full of hope and purpose. I get to make this podcast. I get to print artworks, and they end up hanging on people's walls in their home. It feels so surreal. Back then, I blamed myself for the downward spiral. I thought it was somehow my fault, something I could have avoided. But after doing 57 interviews for this podcast, I realized something. Life isn't just an endless climb upward. It's full of ups and it's full of downs, and you never really know what's waiting for you on the other side. I'm your host, Jacob Johnson, and this is the Mired Is Real podcast, a narrative journey into the lives that shape art. Today's episode, Colette Martin. Right after the break. Hey guys, I'm working on something really cool. Each month, I'm picking a different theme, and I'm making a physical art zine that I'm going to be shipping out to people with a pack of stickers each month to those supporters who are signed up on Patreon. If you enjoy this show and you want to get art delivered to your door, as well as enjoy all the extra bonus clips and extra free content I'm putting up on Patreon, go ahead and go over to patreon.com/MyArtIsReal. As always, we're releasing more and more prints each and every month. So if you want to support me and the artist directly, head on over to MyArtIsReal.com and collect a limited edition art print. Thank you so much for listening and enjoy the episode.
Hi, I'm Colette Martin. I am a painter, illustrator, and educator based out of Portland, Oregon.
Colette took my call outside. Throughout the chat, her story was accompanied by the ambient sounds of birds chirping and frogs croaking. It was nice. It was relaxing. It made me wish I was outside instead of in my office. Well, at least in my office, I do have my pet bunny. Colette is such a free spirit. But the town she grew up in is not exactly a safe haven for free spirits. You didn't grow up in Portland, right? Where did you grow up?
No, I'm from like a small town down in southern Oregon. It's very rural. It's kind of a hellhole, honestly. Kind of a nightmare. But yeah.
A hellhole? She's got to be exaggerating. Surely, right?
Well, it was the capital of the West Coast KKK meeting place. So that type of hellhole. Or maybe it's just the Oregon capital for the KKK. But generally a very backwards, I would say, place to grow up.
Holy shit. I stand corrected. It just might actually be a hellhole that she comes from. Despite how shitty some of the people in the town could have been, Colette still managed to find bright spots. Nature was one of them.
I speak with disdain now, but I it instilled like a deep love and appreciation for wilderness. It's the Rogue Valley area, so it's like the convergence of a few different beautiful like river systems, and it's right next to the beach and the mountains. So I spent a lot of my childhood outside looking at animals or, you know, camping, and just the proximity to nature is unbeatable.
Ah, nature. Probably the single greatest perk of growing up in a small town. You actually have access to nature. And for Colette, that love for the outdoors stuck. It's rooted deep in her artworks, which I always feel like it's set in some whimsical fantasy world. And nature, it didn't just inspire her. Nature is inside of her, literally.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I loved going camping and rolling around in the dirt. There's like a great home video of me when I was like a baby outside, like literally rolling in the mud, and then I'm like eating it. And my dad is like, ah.
More than consuming mud, she consumed art. She can't even remember a time where she wasn't being creative or trying to draw something new.
Yeah, yeah. I can't remember not being obsessed with drawing and art in general. My parents were super encouraging with it as well. So I'm sure they saw an interest there as a child, and then they just kept feeding it like a little fire and were very positive. I think my dad was also a creative kid, but he had parents that kind of wanted to diffuse that in him. So he did the opposite. But yeah, I can't remember not loving, I can't remember not drawing, which is kind of crazy, actually.
If your parents are supportive in your passions, especially if your passion is art, you've already gotten a head start. That's a huge deal, especially when the stereotype of the starving artist still looms over every kid who picks up a paintbrush or a pencil. What kind of things did your parents do to help support you?
They would get me the supplies. I remember having a lot of printer paper at my disposal, you know? And I remember having a book on figure drawing with like nude poses in it. And that was, I think I was like in the second or first grade. So very risque to my peers. But to me, I was like, loved the human form. I just like drawing. And my parents took me whenever they could. Whenever we left town, we went to art museums. So they exposed me to art. And my brother and I were enrolled in like a craft after school thing as well. So I like with this lovely older woman, Lola. Shout out to Lola. I hope she hears. she like cultivated so much creativity in me. Yeah, Lola.
She wasn't just drawing. She was obsessed with it. Art wasn't just something she did. It was who she was.
Unfortunately, I was really stubborn and I was like, oh, I'm doing this. It's this or nothing. There's no plan B, really. I think maybe when I was like in the fifth grade, I was like, maybe I could be a chef. But that was, you know, like a fifth grade moment there. I always wanted to do art. And I did, especially growing up in a small town, I received a lot of pushback, you know, like just people thinking it was stupid, just a dumb thing to do with my life. Yeah, no other way to put it. But
all right, then everyone starts coming out of the woodwork to give their unsolicited opinions, like your life choices are somehow gonna ruin their day. Unless you're a parent and it's your kid, maybe just shut up, maybe just stay out of it. Do you remember a specific time when somebody tried to tear down your dream?
Yeah, actually, I remembered, this was actually from my uncle, so not some random stranger, but I had Thanksgiving with my uncle, not very close with him, and he was like, what are you going to do with that? And then just kind of drilled me the whole night and told me I was going to have to marry rich if I wanted to keep doing what I was doing. He's like, good thing you have supportive parents. Maybe you can just live off your dad's dime forever or whatever. I don't know. I'm fucking like 18 or something. But that stuck out because I remember like he just did that in front of, a whole group of people that I didn't know. And I was too young to really stand up for myself. But yeah, fuck you, Uncle Lou. I feel about that. That's so horrible. And he did it. He said the whole speech while he was like flipping through my sketchbook, which I had with me, like, because I just have my sketchbook all the time. So he's like flipping through it, telling me I'm going to have to marry rich. And well, guess what, Uncle Lou? I'm the rich man.
I think most of us have an Uncle Lou, you know, the classic naysayer. But the doubters don't stop there. They're everywhere trying to throw water on Colette's fire.
But yeah, that was an instance where I would go to the doctor often and my doctors would be like, what are you studying? And I'd be like, I'm studying art. And they're like, oh, what do you even do with that? What do you even do with that? So my dad and I have this like ongoing joke that whenever I get into like a different gallery show or like some illustration work and I show it to him, he says, what are you even going to do with that? Because that was like such a common, you know, thing that I heard growing up. A lot of naysayers.
Growing up as a free spirit, living in a hellhole, wasn't exactly easy. But Colette wasn't known to let things get in her way.
I was pretty determined. I don't think I had a moment where I was like, I'm not. Yeah, no, I always was going to just do it anyway. And, you know, for as many people I had saying, prodding or, you know, questioning my path, I had just as many, like, cheerleaders growing up, you know, like a first grade teacher that, you know, would see potential or a Lola type or someone in, you know, mostly just educators that were very encouraging of my path, I suppose. So I can't neglect them in this narrative either.
Obsessed. That's the only way to put it. Colette was absolutely obsessed with art. Every spare minute, every school lunch break, she was drawing. But here's the thing. Not all of us grow up believing art could actually be a career. For Colette, that belief came from her dad. He'd once dreamed of a creative career himself, and he made sure she knew it was possible.
You know, funny enough, my dad, his childhood best friend, is the son of the president of Disneyland, which is very weird, but, or the president of Disney, not even Disneyland, just Disney, period. And so my dad had this like little window into a whole other life of creativity. And I think it was his best friend's dad that fostered the creativity and said, like, one day maybe you could come work and be an animator or character designer or something. But his own father said, no, you're going to be a machinist, which is sad. But my dad growing up, he would kind of tell me these stories about seeing the inner workings of Disney. And of course, now kind of as an adult, I'm like, I have no desire to ever work in that industry. But that was like my first childhood exposure to being like, oh, this is legitimate. This is something you can do for money. And also my parents, my dad made money in very unconventional ways. Like he was a DJ for many years. And then he used to like build haunted houses. So he was like kind of a fabricator in other ways. So I was like, you know, it's possible. But the internet too, like I remember getting on Instagram and seeing artists like Caitlin Hackett down in the Bay Area making her art as a living. And also just like keeping my eye on galleries as well, which is kind of full circle because it's now galleries that I show in sometimes. So it's like, oh, very touching. But I knew there was a future that was instilled in me very young. So I didn't have any questions. It was honestly the older I got, the more I was like, oh, I'm fucked. Like this is so scary. But yeah, little me was pretty determined.
She was ready to get the hell out of her hometown and see the world. The path she took, which eventually led to her in Portland, Oregon, where she lives now, wasn't exactly ordinary. It was packed full of artistic inspiration. And what school did you start out at? What college did you start going to?
I initially attended the Kansas City Art Institute. No affiliation to the like or the for-profit. They just share the same name. It was good. I met a lot of really wonderful people, but it ended up being a little bit too fine art focused. I felt like too dogmatic, maybe, for me personally. I was happy there, but I felt like I just had this niggling feeling that there was more. I don't know. Maybe I've always felt that way.
She wanted more out of her art school experience. So where do you think she went? Okay, come on. You can guess. Go ahead. I'll wait. Yeah, The place where all artists seem to land at some point. New York City.
I was dating this, like, fucking, this guy who sucked. But he was, like, moving to Paris. And we were just kind of dating in the interim before he moved to Paris. And I was like, well, if he's moving to Paris, then I think I should move to New York. And so I applied to the School of Visual Arts and got in and got a scholarship and kind of blew my socks off. But yeah, and then I took a year off and just kind of like did freelance illustration gigs and then moved to New York. Et voila.
She was doing freelance illustration before she even graduated? That's not bad. I'm always curious on how artists land their first jobs, and Colette's method was one I hadn't heard before. She was using Craigslist.
Craigslist has a feature where you can like set it to anywhere in the world to receive an email notification for when a keyword is used. So I just set it to like send me an email to this separate email account anytime the word illustration, drawing, painting was used. And then I applied to every single gig. And yeah, I did a lot of weird like little things like corporate mascots and
she wasn't exactly thriving, but she was getting by. A little dog walking here, a weird, odd art gig over there. She was surviving. But let me tell you, some of those art commissions, they got pretty weird.
And I still have like that weird portfolio of work I was making at the time. But yeah, I was like making pennies, I'm sure. Like I did police sketches for, I did a lot of weird stuff. I'm going to be so real with you. I did a lot of weird, I'm pretty sure I made someone's like strange, kinky, like art spanking fantasy illustrations. don't know if that's okay for the podcast, but it's true.
As soon as I had heard Craigslist, I knew there was going to be some stories. But oh boy, they were even crazier than I expected.
Yeah, I did like a bunch of spanking illustrations. And I was able to like negotiate a higher pay because I was like, you're a little freak. Not that there's anything wrong with spanking.
Okay, spanking art. Honestly, that's not the weirdest thing I've heard, but oh, how naive I was, because what came next, it took things to a whole new level.
I had a couple that wanted me to like make a painting while they had sex. It was very, and you know what? I did it.
Look, I get performance anxiety just knowing somebody might be watching me, you know, do a presentation or something. So now imagine being watched while you're doing the deed and you're being painted by an artist, you know, someone who's laser focused on all your little details, even every little fold, every angle. No, thank you. I'm good. So naturally, I asked her how much she got paid for this very intimate commission. I was hoping she'd say a couple grand, right? That's only fair. But nope, that couple got a real bargain.
For $100. For $100, I was 21. You know, you gotta cut me some slack here, but I did it. I did it. And yeah, that's what I mean. Like I was scrounging around, but I was really determined. I was like moving to New York and needed to save money, and so I was just doing all kinds of weird shit.
That one's crazy for $100. Like, I'd imagine it'd be at least, like, 500 or 1,000.
No. Oh, 100. I know. I hear that now, and I'm like, oh my god. What was I thinking?
Was it, like, did you have to do it over Skype or something, or was it in person?
No, I went to their house, and I set up a little easel.
Was that not terrifying?
Yeah. I'm so surprised that I didn't get like kidnapped or something. But no, I always carried a knife with me and pepper spray, and I was like, that'll be good enough. But now I'm yeah, I'm just bewildered. And you know what? Very nice couple. They just wanted that art of their consummation.
Being the strong-willed, determined person she is, Colette scraped together what she needed and made her way to New York City. But for her, it would only be a brief chapter, because just like that, the COVID-19 pandemic hit New York.
Yeah, I remember March 17th, the whole city shut down. So, and it felt like I just got my whole life ripped out from under my feet. you know, I was looking forward to graduating with my friends, and most of my friends are international, so I've actually never seen them again. yeah, it was pretty bad. It sucked.
Me and my wife had always talked about moving to New York, and we're planning on doing it, like a lot of artists do. But then when COVID hit, we saw what was going on and thought, nope, that would be a nightmare. Let's just stay where we're at. Colette, though, she was right in the middle of it, and it was terrifying.
They were, like, setting up, like, makeshift hospitals and tents in the parks, and I think you've seen, like, the barges that were floating around New York, maybe, hospital barges. I remember going to the Trader Joe's, like, wrapped up in the balaclava, and there's, like, no food on any of the shelves, because I was living in Manhattan at the time. And that's when I started to get a little freaked out. And so I booked a flight to go stay with my sister in Seattle. For some reason, I just didn't want to be, like, alone. And, well, no shit, I didn't want to be alone. It was scary. And I was living with, like, seven guys that I didn't know. I was just living in their living room. And I was like, I don't want to be fucking locked up with all these guys playing video games in their room. And I'm scared. So, yeah, I flew out to Seattle. I thought, it'll be 2 weeks. I was dating a sweet guy, and I was like, oh, we'll see each other in 2 weeks. Obviously, we broke that off. And then I just finished out my education online over Zoom in my sister's living room.
When you're still in college, already unsure about what's coming after school, and the whole world gets thrown into a pandemic, it's more than just being afraid of getting sick. It's the fact that your whole future, which already felt uncertain, suddenly feels like a black hole. Everyone's locked inside, everything's on pause, and you're just stuck there, trying to figure out who you are and what the hell you're supposed to do next in your life.
And then I didn't know what to do, but I knew I couldn't keep sleeping on my sister's couch, so I decided maybe I should sleep on my parents' couch in Southern Oregon until I figured out a job. Yeah, I was just kind of bouncing around trying to figure out what I should do or go. Or there was no stability in my life at all, and so I think that was, it made it easier for me to uproot everything. Whereas, you know, my fiance talks about the pandemic, and for him it was like, oh, I just had to stay inside, and I got checks from my job. And so I think the lack of stability in my life already kind of made it easier in some ways. But yeah, that was a tumultuous time. My life is so much more boring now. I do the same thing every day, and I love it.
The original plan was simple. Graduate, get a side job, work on her art, and try to build a career. She thought when she moved to Seattle, she might be back to New York in a couple of weeks. But that move back, it never happened. Instead, she ended up back home, living with her parents, in that same hellhole of a town she once couldn't wait to escape. Looking back now, New York City was never really her place anyway. It wasn't natural for her. Colette thrives in nature, so being back home under these weird circumstances, wandering into the mountains, hiking in the woods, breathing again, it felt amazing. Even if part of her still worried she was missing out on some big artistic opportunities.
I went from living in New York City, which I think was kind of an unnatural environment for me. I really love nature and peace and quiet. And then living in the hills of Ashland, Oregon, which is, you know, stunning nature. I'd go every day when I finished up my shift, I'd go to the lake and paddleboard, or I'd go for a hike. So that part felt like, it felt like all the stages of falling in love again. Like I was back in Oregon for the first time as an adult, and it felt like every sunset and every, like, you know, skinny dip or whatever, it all felt like, oh my fucking God. Yeah, this is like the most natural, wonderful thing. So that helped me realize, like, I have to have some proximity to nature in my life.
Colette finished her degree online and started looking for work. At one point during our call, I asked Colette if painting a couple having sex was the weirdest job she'd ever done. And then she hit me with this one.
During the pandemic, I found a, like, summer of 2020, I moved to Ashland, Oregon, which is like a tiny hippie town in Southern Oregon, right on the border. And I found a gig working as a, quote, art live-in art director for a nonprofit, a spiritual nonprofit for women and children, called, it's called the Ministry of Awakening. And I lived on the compound. Compound is the right word, unfortunately, up in the hills of Southern Oregon. And it was a cult. It was like a straight up crazy cult based on this like psychology. The founder made this type of therapy called Hikomi. And I found out later that he wasn't even a doctor. He just had like an honorary doctorate from some stupid fucking school. And his disciple was running, like, he had died and then she decided to revitalize it.
An artist working for a cult? That's a first for this podcast. Holy smokes. Now, just to be clear, Colette wasn't a member of said cult, but she did work for them, and she definitely saw some of the weird things going on.
So we would have these people coming in and living during a pandemic. So it'd be like quarantine together. They would come in, do these insane ceremonies where they would let the spirits possess them in what was called a constellation. And then, and I was just making posters and making their website. That was my like summer 2020 gig. It was insane. It was actually, it was crazy. It was crazy.
That's wild. I think what's funnier about it is the fact that like while they're doing all these weird things, you're just over here like making posters and a website for these people. Yeah,
they're like, make sure you get the date right. Like, okay, crazy. But yeah, it was wild. It was really wild. And they more and more, the founder kept being like, join us for the ceremony on the 4th of July. And I did participate in a couple. So I have that experience now.
Are you glad you have that experience, or is it something that you regret?
No regrets, only side quests. Honestly, I'm at the time it was kind of horrifying and it ended really badly, but now I'm like, that's the type of thing that you only do when you're broke in your 20s and you're like a freelance artist during a global pandemic, you know?
I wanted to look it up, you know, have a read, maybe a few laughs, but thankfully, they got shut down.
It's defunct now. I looked it all up. You can't find it anymore. I think it got shut down, which is good because the founder or the person who's running it is just, she's not the bad taking advantage of people. I was making their website. I was running their social media. And I was designing posters for like their ceremony things, which is actually how I found out that it was kind of a cult like setup. Because you'd pay like $7,000 to come and do these ceremonies. And then once you paid a certain amount or took a certain amount of classes, then you could be elevated to the next like spiritual level or whatever. So you're just paying in for spirituality.
As wild as all of these side quests are, they really gave Colette a lot of life experiences that she can pull from for her art at such a young age. Everything she was experiencing, it went right into her paintings.
I think I was making all these weird decisions and risks and whatnot because I figured it would all be like lore one day, or inspiration or something. I also figured, when else am I going to, you know, live like this? And I was right. Yeah, I hoped it would all come back in some way. I made a lot of paintings, even though they were of other people. It was often about what was happening presently. Like I painted one of my friends who was a firefighter. Who, if anyone you know, remembers what was happening on the West Coast during summer 2020. We were experiencing horrific wildfires. So I was painting firefighters and covered in flames and just kind of the things that were happening around me. And I don't really paint like that anymore. But at that time, that was important for me, I think, to like get out of my system. And I think there's like a certain amount of self-mythologizing when you're an artist. You're like, oh, I did. I don't know, that all of that feels like kind of part of my origin story.
Even while her home, her job, and her surroundings were constantly changing, one thing stayed steady, and that's the paintings. Those never stopped.
Yeah, I guess from the moment I graduated college, I was like, well, I can paint whenever I want now. And yeah, I painted a lot of that when I was living in Ashland on the compound. And then just kind of like the whole year of 2020, wherever I was like painting day and night. And I was just painting these big portraits of the people around me, people I loved and people I was like having a relationship with, or roommates. And yeah, so like if anyone, for context, if you like check out my website under the painting tab, there's the 2020 paintings from that year. It's like pretty much all figurative portraiture, and it's just roommates and lovers and yeah, kind of depicted as these like magical nature deities. And that's what I used to, I think my first gallery situation was with Modern Eden, and I used that body of work to apply to Modern Eden.
Eventually, she left that compound and leaned even more into the art career. The pandemic began easing up a bit. People started going out again, and that meant galleries were looking for new shows.
Yeah, I was using social media a bit. I didn't really, during 2020, I kind of wasn't trying, I guess. I just like would make the paintings and then put them in my closet. And that was kind of good, I think. It was positive to like make a bunch of paintings under the cover, or like the safety of not having to show them or do anything with them. I think that's kind of a special ingredient for authenticity, right? Or authenticity is the special ingredient. And now these days, I sometimes feel like I have a lot of like, I have eyes on me. You know, if I'm making something for a gallery or for a client or what have you, I have to find ways to like make sure no one's watching. But yeah, I eventually invested in a camera, and then I was finally able to photograph all of them. And that's when I started using social media more. And that's when I finally made a website. Yeah, I remember telling my dad I'm going to quit my job because I want to, like the thinking now, the logic now is really backwards. But I was like, I'm going to quit my job so that I can invest in my like art career. I could have done them concurrently. But yeah, I got a camera, and I remember doing all of this in January 2021. And then a few months later, yeah, I started like showing with galleries. I was just cold emailing galleries mostly. And I started doing a little bit of teaching at that time as well. Like I was guest teaching at the Kansas City Art Institute and doing one of their summer programs as well.
So when it came to getting seen by galleries and landing your shows, did you just start cold emailing them? Like, what was your approach?
There's this gallery here up in Portland called Splendorporium, which is a very lovely like community space. I remember I brought a couple big paintings up to them, and she was like, you should apply to this gallery and this gallery and this gallery. One of them was like Arch Enemy and Modern Eden and kind of a bunch of other like pop surrealist lowbrow fantasy type galleries. And I said, yes, ma'am. And I applied to all of them. And I think I applied to like an open call for Modern Eden. And then eventually I just stopped applying. And that, you know how it goes. Like if you show in one gallery, maybe another gallerist will see your work and they reach out to you. And that's what happens. But yeah, that was kind of, at that point, I just was interested in painting and painting alone. And I didn't really see myself doing illustration or something, which is kind of what I'm doing now. But I was just shooting my shot as best as I could.
And how did it feel for you when you got that first show, when your paintings weren't just getting tucked away in the closet anymore, but were actually up on walls for people to stand in front of and enjoy.
Unreal. Like, I was so excited. I was really, really excited. Yeah, I remember just like, I was in my childhood bedroom for some reason. I don't remember why, but I was home. I was visiting home and got the email and was like, I'm going to show with... That was when I got into the Modern Eden show. I was freaking out because that was a gallery I liked when I was like a teenager. So it was kind of like a full circle moment. And they're fun to work with. And it's funny how those dreams become kind of realized and then they become everyday. And then you're looking for the next hoop that you can jump through, I suppose.
And so now that you've done shows and you're teaching art classes, what's next? What's your big thing that's coming up?
I'm making a body of illustration, like work, like an illustration portfolio. And I'm hoping to, once I finish it, maybe start working more in kind of like publishing in that sector of things. And right now I'm like running my Patreon and selling on my website. So I'm kind of going it solo and it's been a lot of fun. I really enjoy it, but I feel like something about illustration has been hanging over my head where I really want to give it a go. So I'm kind of putting my all in and seeing if I can, I guess.
Looking back at everything that you've been through, dealing with all the naysayers, pushing through the weird jobs, the chaos, the doubt, and still making it through to the other side and being a working artist, how does that feel?
Oh, man. Just like an immense amount of gratitude for every person that has ever like left the door open for me, you know, to walk through, or has supported me or given me a chance or like invited me to do a show, like you included. There's just this immense amount of gratitude and also a lot of kind of full circle moments of disbelief. I remember during the pandemic, I was chatting with a friend and I told him, all I want is to make enough money doing my art that I can like live in a apartment. I was like, and you know what? That's like a big, I'm not laughing because that's not nothing. That's a lot of people just making money, make enough money to like have a place to live. And what has happened in my career since then has just become so much bigger than that. And I'm really, really grateful and also aware of how many people have helped me get there.
Colette told me the story about one of her exes. This was back when she was living on the Colt compound. She was dating a baseball coach. He played in the major leagues once. We're not naming names here, but she remembered something he said on a podcast recently. He talked about how when you finally make it to the majors, you're trying so hard to stay there that you don't always stop to look around and appreciate where you are. That stuck with her, because right now, Colette's playing in the major leagues of art, doing shows, selling works, making a living from her creative craft. But the difference is, she takes the time to look back, to recognize how far she's come, and to imagine how amazed her younger self would be to see her where she is now.
Being able to look back and compare, I think, has been the helpful full circle, you know, part of that equation of, oh yeah, I look back and this is everything that I wanted when I was 24 years old. Like, this is everything. Having my own art studio, are you kidding me? Getting to make money out doing what I love, like, or even not even the money aspect, but just like waking up every single day. I think being able to look back and see where I was and what I was doing really helps put it into focus. So I'm glad I have that comparative device, but I also like, you just gotta wake up every day and be like, I'm in the major leagues, and whatever the major leagues is to you, you know what I mean? Like, it's different for everybody, but for me, 4 years ago, this would have been my definition of the major leagues. So yeah, just try to take it every day as it comes. And have goals, of course, right? But we're good. We're good. We're playing baseball. We're good.
I have to look back as well. Back to when I released episode 1 of this show. Nobody knew it was coming, so nobody was there to listen except for my family. Now there are tens of thousands of you tuning in, and honestly, it blows my mind. I get to spend my days talking to incredible artists like Colette and sharing their stories with all of you. I'm grateful. This right here, making this is my version of the Major Leagues. When you hear Colette's journey, it's wild, unique, and completely her own. But there are threads she shares with so many of our past guests. Those ups and downs, the moments of doubt, the voices that told her she'd fail before she'd even gotten started. Those twists and turns, they all shaped her. She wasn't meant to grind it out in New York, desperately chasing the next gallery show. She was meant to be in nature, soaking in the world around her, finding inspiration, listening to the birds chirp, and painting something honest. Thank you, everyone, for listening to another episode of the Myers-Real Podcast. As you all know, I cannot do this show without you. All of you listening, sharing it with your friends, it means the world to me. I was super excited to have Colette come on the podcast. I've known her for quite a while now. She makes incredible art. It's just amazing to have such a cool person come on the show and tell us such a crazy, wild journey she had. If you want to support the show, head on over to patreon.com/MyersRealPodcast. I'm now giving away stickers every month, a new sticker pack. I'm giving away a zine every month. I'm working on issue one right now to start giving out to people this month of May. So if you want the zine for this month, sign up now, and then you'll get a zine every month as well, right to your mailbox with a pack of stickers. It's art right to your door. And you get bonus clips of the podcast. You get discounts on all the limited edition art prints that are on the website, which you can go purchase as well if you want to support the show. That directly supports the show and supports the artist who made the work. So yeah, if you want to support the show, that's how you can do it. Thank you so much, and I'll see you in the next one.